DJMCloud.com podcast number 16, recorded November 15th, 2011. Images coming in from Zuccotti Park in New York City. Protest movement. Well, I definitely wanted to talk about the protests, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Oakland, and a lot of other movements around the country. A lot of them have been attacked by the police. And we're gonna have to see how it develops, but it looks like now we're seeing people move back into Zuccotti Park in New York after a very large scale raid. Occupy Wall Street saw a lot of people with their stuff taken and a lot of people arrested in what I think was an early morning raid. But in any event, the park was closed off and recently just admitted people back into the area that that people are calling Liberty Square, or the area that New York City calls Zuccotti Park. And a lot of the developments also are happening on the West Coast. So I do want to revisit those, and I have a little bit of audio that I captured from a little earlier tonight that I want to play. I wanted to talk about the iOS photo apps that I like using on my iPhone 4S. Now, it does have a different camera than the iPhone 4, and it's definitely worth I think upgrading. It's a better camera. I think it has more realistic color composition. I read a review that was pointing out some flaws, and it's certainly not perfect, but yeah, the iPhone 4S definitely has more, I think, realistic default color compensation. And of course, there's many different ways to adjust the color, both before and after you take the shot. Now, one of those tools that I want to mention is Photogene 2. This just came out, and I really think that it's worth looking into. It is a photo app that allows you to take a picture. It also allows you to look at your library, and you can modify photos. It has sort of a wheel that you can turn to use such features as rotate, adjust, presets, which is like a set of filters, and you can also put text on the image. I think it's a really cool app, and I think that it's one of the ones that's come out recently that I think that a lot of iOS photo fans would definitely enjoy checking out. Now, there's another photo app that I want to talk about. This one is, I don't know if you could say more on the novelty side, but it has a, basically the purpose of simulating a point and shoot camera. Now, it's called Pocket Cam. It's from a company called Punicasoft. It's called Pocket Camera Pro, and what you can do is look through the screen on your iPhone, but the sidebar is a camera menu that's designed very much like the menus on point-and-shoot cameras. You have a wheel you turn to put toward the play button, which allows you to review photos. It has a camera button, and then it has one of those four-sided buttons with a center, and then four rectangular, quadrilateral, I guess, buttons that are symmetrically placed around the middle square button. And this allows you features like putting the timer on and flash auto always on, the type of focusing you wanted to use. And what's kind of fascinating about it is that it uses the left, right, up, down kind of logic of what you may be used to if you use digital point and shoots over the last handful of years. So I think it's cool. It's a very interesting app to simulate that type of thing. There's another app that I really like called Lens Light. It's like Lens Flare. It's from the same company, and they allow you to add lens light effects on your images. Very cool. There's another app that I like that's actually for writing in a way, but it's for writing images. It's called the Amazing Typewriter, and it, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's a typewriter simulator. Maybe it's only for people who think that sounds cool, but I enjoyed using it. I think it's cool. Another app that has come out that's very very interesting development is GarageBand for iPhone. Now, GarageBand for iPad had been out, and my wife Jessica had used it, and it's very cool on iPad. But now they have the same app is universal, and not only will it work on iPad, but it'll work on your iPhone. You can record music on your iPhone. I do think that's really cool, and it's worth checking out. Wall of Sound is one other app that I recommend you check out. It allows you to browse your music based on album art. Well, in this episode, I'm talking both about iOS apps and the Occupy movement. But if you think that those two don't have a connection between them, then I think reconsider, especially with all the photography and streaming video and other technologies that are associated with this movement. And I think you can see on the Instagram blog, they had a recent post about photos taken at the raid of Occupy Wall Street at Zuccotti Park recently. And you can find a link to that post in the show notes. The show notes are at djmcloud.com. I also have an app to talk about that's actually a web app. And furthermore, it's actually the code for a web app for users to install themselves. So it has a narrower a group of potential users than iOS apps, but I think that it's a useful utility that I've made myself. I use it sometimes to upload photos and then put a link. I'll often link to the photo on Twitter. But what this app has is basic gallery functionality, photo uploading. It has a basic text file creation utility that can read the text files back, so it's a very simplistic blogging system. And there's a new version of this free and open source app that you can download at pacificpelican.us/CMS. Now, I have some clips that I recorded off of live streaming video from New York in Zuccotti Park.
Nothing ain't gonna change it more unless nature to watch and clarify your dirty deeds. So I hope humanity can rearrange and change your dirty style and behavior against immigrants and working class people and pluck out the minimum wage out of the industry. Because I can't help New York City. New York City needs $15.
I'm just saying that I didn't lose much stuff, and it was traumatic being here last night. I was here, I was pretty pissed off, I was yelling at cops, trying to make people dumb about themselves.
All right, cameraman, go to him right now.
But, I have to admit,
it looks like
heartless. I mean, it is what it is. You gotta take the good with the bad, man.
I saw a few people go in the park. They're opening up a little bit at a time. We just exceeded my recording limit. 3 hours.
Island that I had since I was like 6 years old that I've been in the library for someone else. Like that's the schedule that we're dealing with. And right now I'm hopeful. The GA is going really well, and it looks like the energy and the spirit is wonderful down here. I don't know.
A few of the voices of the Occupy movement. Now, as I alluded to earlier, the Occupy movement is on both coasts and across the country in between. Now, of course, in addition to that, there's people around the world that are throwing either their version of those protests or maybe directly linked protests to the Occupy movement. And I think that the Occupy Oakland movement is an excellent example of one that has been repeatedly brutalized by the police. Recently, during this wave in the last few days of crackdowns, and there's certainly a lot of very creative people and a lot of very determined protesters in the Bay Area, and I think that Oakland as a city has so many problems and issues, and the business interests that are urging the incompetent Mayor Gene Kwan toward cracking down are very much harming the interests of the people of the city of Oakland. The business that are there on Broadway in Oakland are not, in many cases, business is even worth having. This city is in seriously bad shape. I used to go over there when I lived in San Francisco. I remember when I went to Oakland, it was worse every time I went from 2002 until 2005 or 2006. It just continued to get worse and worse. And Jerry Brown's attempt to revive that city definitely failed. Now, I think that the police crackdowns on all of these, many of these Occupy camps around the country are going to actually fuel the movement. And I think a lot of people are saying that. Paul Krugman is one example. He writes, "In a way, Occupy Wall Street and all of those who are sympathetic to its concerns should be grateful." And he's writing about the raid of Zuccotti Park. You can see a link to that in the show notes. And I think that the attention given to the Occupy movement by this coordinated series of raids across the country is bringing more attention to the movement. I think it's might be difficult for some of these movements to rebuild their infrastructure when a lot of people's tents and possessions were seized and destroyed by police departments. But I think that the overall movement probably has more momentum now. I think that in addition, the media on the left wing seems to become more and more widely sympathetic with every police crackdown. And of course, the right wing has continued to try to demonize and marginalize the Occupy movement. If anything, that continues to fuel it. On Twitter, a lot of people are talking about the various Occupy movements. You can see hashtags like #OWS or #OO. And I think that these are often very useful ways to track some of these different events. Now, when I go on Twitter, I see an ad tweet, a promoted tweet, quote unquote promoted, where they're actually allowing someone to pay to have their tweet, essentially their ad, placed in the stream of tweets. Now, I know that Twitter has experimented with advertising in numerous different ways, but I think that this is relatively unprecedented because this is a case of content being inserted into people's Twitter feed or Twitter stream that they're reading from the different people or organizations that they follow on Twitter. So it definitely is not something that is surprising given the rumors and I think announcements about these ads being used, but it is a little jarring, and I understand Twitter's a company trying to make money, but when I see a promoted tweet in the stream of tweets that I think of as the list that of tweets that I'm following, I do think they're definitely in new territory with advertising, and they're putting ads right in the middle of content. With a slight note, I guess it's very analogous to Google's AdWords, but I think there's a certain amount of difference because it's not as though Google has placed promoted items in their Google Reader stream, although maybe that just awaits more attention to Google Reader before they do something like that. I think that the video plays a very big part in this. The streaming video and, of course, recorded video plays a big part in the Occupy movements. And so I do think that that following these live streams, while it often can offer vulgar asides and pointless sideways shots and wind audio and many other issues, it can also offer real time looks at protest assemblies, police actions, and other things. Now, in the category of police actions that I find terribly disturbing, among many, there are reports of deployments of noise cannons in New York and other places. This, I think, is a terroristic weapon being used by police. The idea of shooting harmful noise, weaponized noise at people with noise cannons, I think is obnoxious and unconscionable, damaging people's hearings because they're at a protest, maybe covering it, maybe participating in it, maybe as bystanders, and you're willing to do that kind of damage to people's hearing. That to me is unconscionable, and there's many things that police departments across the country, especially the NYPD, the Oakland PD, and many other departments should be absolutely ashamed of. This is just one of those that's just in a list of terrible, unconscionable things that police departments are doing. Now, I have a few stories about the the raids, including the BBC News on the Occupy Oakland raid, and that's all at the show notes at djmcloud.com. You can also find more information about what I'm writing and other things I'm doing at twitter.com/PacificPelican. Now, I also have an interest in the video that people are sharing on Twitter, because I think the ability to record a short but important moment with your camera phone and then put it up on a website very quickly is very useful in these protest situations. And I think that YFrog.com is out front with this, allowing people to share videos on their Twitter feed pretty easily. There's other services that are doing this, and what's an interesting rumor that's out there is that Instagram may allow that. Now, maybe they'll allow people to put retro filters, and it would be kind of cool if they added like a simple video editing app. They added that to an Instagram video offering. I think that's very possible. Technologically, I don't know what their intentions are, if they're going to offer this, but I think that Instagram and other sites really could start offering video now. There's very much use to video in protests, but I think even for online sharing products for everyday matters or for general use, I think video is a useful medium. And while maybe people will start overusing it at first when it's introduced widely for sharing on Twitter, and I think that it might find a good medium after a while, and many moments are well represented on video. Of course, I enjoy video as well as photos, so some people might find themselves more in one camp or another. But I think you should offer a good sharing service for both camps, whatever your Twitter sharing service is. As long as that fits with the type of site that you're running. So I do have one sports story. I think that first I want to mention the one more video story. I've been talking about streaming, and there's Ustream.tv, Livestream.com, and other sites that are being used to share Occupy video in real time. And then there's the sites that specialize in allowing people to view recorded video. And I was talking to Jessica about them recently, and I reiterate the point that I often make, and I don't know, I'd like to hear if other people have different ideas, but I really think YouTube is the leader in the video space. Now, of course, statistically that's true, traffic-wise that's true, but I think that other sites are mostly pretenders. There's a third tier, sites like Vimeo and Blip.tv, and they're good sites, but I don't think they're big enough. They don't have the scale. They don't have they're just not on the same level as YouTube. Now, when you look at a site like Vimeo, I mean, this is a cool site, and it has a lot of cool videos on it. The problem is, at least last time I noticed, there anyone who has a free account, and it seems like a lot of people have free accounts, it's not as common to have pay accounts as on a site like Flickr, just in my anecdotal observation. But people have free accounts, they can post their videos to the web, but the videos are not viewable on iOS devices. The HTML5 or whatever option is not available unless people have pay Vimeo accounts. And I'm talking about the person that posts it, not the person that views it, I think. Now, I would say this is just going to leave you behind when YouTube famously supports video, HTML5 video that's good for mobile devices, and I think that you gotta be able to technologically keep up if you want to stay in the same space. Now, I know, like, culturally, I guess some people like Vimeo, and I think, yeah, you might find more encouraging comments, maybe fewer comments, and fewer views, but unless you're, of course, you have the right niche there, or are good at driving traffic onto your video. But I would say that you can turn comments off on YouTube. I'm that would be fine. I think it's still a more effective dynamic distribution outlet. So to my sports story, I do think that a couple big games happened last weekend. I, as a Michigan State alum, I was very happy to see Michigan State go on the road, beat Iowa. They hadn't won there in a long time, and it was an important road win. And I think that really shows that Mark D'Antonio and Michigan State are definitely having another good season to follow up last year. Now this is something Michigan State fans really want to see, is consistency year in, year out, having good teams, good seasons like we have the last few. I think that's very encouraging. Now, the big featured game, I think, for the weekend was Oregon versus Stanford. It's really cool to see Oregon beat Stanford. Much better team. But it isn't easy being the team that's hyped up. So if you want to see more podcasts, go to djmcloud.com. And if you want to send us an email, send it to podcast@sf3am.com. So thanks to Jim. He provided us with the music for this episode, djmcloud.com podcast number 16.